T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
The Bernstein and McKnight Show.
New Orleans.
Congratulations to New Orleans for winning the first pick in the 2019 NBA lottery.
Middays on the Score.
Alvin. Come on now, Alvin.
I'd be excited too.
That's the first pick. That's the good one. That's the one you wanted, not seven. Seven.
Or even second.
Seven.
Seven's
the
worse.
Bulls got seven, and that's a no good. Vince Goodwill saw it all, and he joins us now. He's on Twitter at Vince Goodwill. The Yahoo senior NBA writer is on the Alpamonte Ford hotline. Alpamonte Ford, 500 new and used vehicles to choose from. Well, Vincent, it sounded like it actually kind of an entertaining night for the people involved with all the stuff going on. It looked like it must have been fun to be there.
It was. You know, you're shut off from the outside world, so you don't have cell phones, you don't have computers, you don't have anything electronics, there's no clocks on the wall, there's no windows. It's kind of like you're in a casino, and you're sort of sequestered for 2 hours. So, and then on top of that, you're in a room where we were off to the left, if you guys just showed the video. We're off to the far left, sitting in chairs, and we're looking at all of these very newer, very conservative-looking fellows. And then when the numbers come up, and I'm not one of those guys that's trying to add up the numbers to see where it goes. Like, look, it's too many combinations for all that. When you tell me who it is, I'll know, right? And then you hear Alvin yell out, bleep yeah, after raising his arms like he's Rocky after, you know, beating up Clubber Lang. And you just, like, it's amazing to watch him walk down and slap everybody's hand because he's animated and they're not.
So, Vince, you're sequestered. Phones had to go away. Apple Watches had to go away. Pagers and beepers, all that kind of stuff had to leave. Or whatever you're using these days. What would have been your first tweet if you'd been allowed to tweet during the NBA draft lottery as you were sitting there where it happened?
Holy bleep. That's what it would have been. I know everybody thinks like it's funny that no matter who would have come out with the winner of this, someone can say rigged, right? Like, you can come out with an explanation for every single winner and say rigged. If it's New York, you can say rigged. If it's Chicago, you can say rigged. If it was New Orleans, you can say rigged. So I was just going to say, holy bleep, because I didn't see that coming. The part for me that was more telling was the fact that so many teams moved up with these new odds, like 6% for the Lakers, 6% for the Pelicans. And so many teams moved down. The Bulls, the Knicks. Mm-hmm. You know, like, the Phoenix Suns, the Cleveland Cavaliers. Like, whether you can say these teams tanked or not, they'll never admit it. But now this has to put some real pause in your mind before you do it, because there's no incentive for that anymore.
Do you think that Zion Williamson was as disappointed in this outcome as many people seem to be projecting him to be? I'm looking at all the memes going on Twitter now of him being disappointed that he's not going to the Knicks, and some saying that he's going to, you know, pull a John Elway here and decide he doesn't want to play there. What is the actual dynamic, and were you trying to put together some clues based on his body language or his reaction?
In the moment, guys, no, because, A, here's the thing we have to factor in. He's 19 years old. And although we tend to look at all athletes in like a box and assume that they have adult-level maturity, he's a kid. And when you're a kid, and here's the other part of it, too. We've seen how the way the lottery odds have changed. When you're a kid and you're 19 and you're looking at, oh, 14% here, 14% there, you kind of have the right to get your hopes up about where you may possibly want to go. This is the one profession, professional sports is the one profession where being excellent at your job means you have no choice on where you actually get to work. So for him to be disappointed, excited, whatever that emotion was going to be in the moment, I think is perfectly understandable. Especially when you consider the fact that there was a one-to-one chance that he would have wound up in New York or L.A. as much as he would have wound up in New Orleans or Memphis. So, yeah, I think he had the right to get his hopes up in that moment and to have whatever emotion that was there, whether it was disappointment, whether it was shock, whatever it was, you give people that space, in my opinion. You give people that space to process it, to have whatever emotion you need to do, have in the moment. I don't think he's going to try to engineer anything. He doesn't even have an agent yet. You know, like, he doesn't have an agent, he doesn't have a shoe contract, any of those other things. So I think we need to give him a little bit of space, and I think by the time the draft combine comes around, he'll have a little bit of perspective. But still, it's 24 to 48 hours after a pretty big shock in your life where you're going to spend at least probably the next 7 years of your career if you are the player that everybody else believes you to be.
He's Vincent Goodwill, Yahoo's senior NBA writer here on the Bernstein and McKnight Show. Vinny, assuming that Zion then does go to New Orleans and we don't have like an Eli Manning situation there, how does their getting the number one pick, from your perspective, affect what they do with Anthony Davis?
Well, I think in the moment, you know, Alvin Gentry and I wrote about it in my piece, but Alvin Gentry says, we're back in the game for Anthony Davis now. But I'm not sure if Anthony Davis, even though, you know, these guys are basketball fans and they understand the hype, you know, surrounding a guy like Zion, they can see, physically see, you know, okay, he's going to be a stud. It's hard for them to embrace believing in a rookie when you've had 7 years of evidence or 8 years of evidence of being in a topsy-turvy sort of situation that Anthony Davis has been in. So while I do think that New Orleans has renewed hope that he'll stick around and that I don't think they're going to make a trade just to trade him because they have another franchise player in tow, I wonder about the other teams who are going to be involved, how this draft slotting has, you know, changed things, because now they have, you know, the number four pick when they were supposed to have number 11. Yeah. And does that add to anything, you know, as far as a trade package or whatever? Or, you know, does that screw up Boston, what Boston wants to do? So I don't think it necessarily changes anything as far as Anthony Davis's wishes, but I wonder if it changes things for the teams who are coming after him. Mm.
What is the value of the number seven pick and Chris Dunn on the open market?
You're going to ask me that question right now? You want me, Chicago, to hate me when I'm like on a one-day excursion here? You want people to come after me, Dan?
Yes. Yes, I do.
Okay. Okay. Clearly, you have no care about my well-being. I appreciate that. But I don't know what that is. Here's the thing. Chris Dunn is a productive-ish point guard who can't shoot. If you have your choice between Chris Dunn and Terry Rozier, who are you taking?
Rozier, because he can hit an open shot.
Okay. And hitting an open shot, while it is the most easy thing you can develop as a player compared to a handle, compared to awareness, compared to all these other different things, the easiest thing you can get, I don't know if Chris Dunn is close enough to getting it to justify, all right, you know what, we're going to take this cost-controlled number seven pick with Chris Dunn and sell this to my owner or whatever. I will say, when I first heard of number seven and I first saw Memphis getting number two, I said, okay, call Memphis and try to get Mike Conley now. Because if they're taking Ja Morant, then they got their franchise point guard for the future, and they don't, not that they don't need a guy like Mike Conley, but positional duplication, the guy's making $30 million, you know, and I'm sure the Bulls haven't openly spoken about that yet. There's still a lot of probably raw feelings from the draft lottery last night. But why wouldn't the Bulls give Memphis a call and try to explore something like that?
I don't know where Mike Conley gets you closer to winning a championship.
Why does everything have to be a championship?
Sorry.
No. I'm just saying, when you've been as bad as the Bulls have been bad, when you've been misdirections, restarts, coaching, hirings, firings, blaming, all other type of stuff. All right, cool. Your standard shouldn't be championship at this point. Like, you've had that, but that was a long time ago.
Yeah, but being not bad. I understand, but absence of bad is never my goal. If it so happens that on your way to trying to build a champion that you get decent and fun and entertaining and competitive and good, that's great, but that's not a goal. You know, if the Bulls are stating that as a goal, that they just want to be competitive and bring in some veterans and be entertaining enough, maybe get a playoff series to pad the coffers a little bit. But to me, that is a byproduct. Being competitive is a byproduct of pursuing the absolute top of the mountain.
You're pursuing a championship, but we've gotten to this place where it's a complete zero-sum proposition. If you're not winning the championship, you're completely worthless. Or you're not competing for a championship, you're completely worthless. There were years in the Jordan years where you could say, okay, yeah, maybe we're competitive, but we're nowhere near a championship. And it didn't dull the memories of those fans. It didn't make those seasons any less fruitful. Now, granted, you had, you know, a great talent, and you could see a path there.
I
think what you're talking about is a path.
Yeah, show me that it's going somewhere, that the being competitive isn't the end in and of itself. Being competitive is what I've always said, the best time to root for your team is when it's getting good, when you know that greatness is possible. That's the best time. It's even more fun sometimes than after winning the title in that refractory period. But I just have no belief that their competitiveness is going to be anything other than the goal, which doesn't make sense to me.
Then basically you're saying that you have no faith in the front office whatsoever. And I think that is the root of everything, the underlying root of everything that you're saying is that regardless of whatever move is made or isn't made or direction that they go, you don't have any faith in the front office. And I'm not saying you're right or wrong, and I'm just saying that's what it sounds like. And to me, my thing is this. I only bring up Mike Conley in the context of you don't need another 19-year-old.
Yeah.
Like, they've drafted reasonably well over the past couple of years. Zach LaVine is a productive player. He's still very young. Lauri Markkanen, Wendell Carter, like, you got some young pieces. Otto Porter is still young enough. You know, was he 23, 24, maybe even younger than that? Where maybe 25?
25, I think.
Well, okay, fine. You have something now. You don't need another 19-year-old to basically put yourself in a position to say, okay, we can be in the playoffs. And once you get in the playoffs, as long as you're competitive and you have enough flexibility, I think there are too many teams afraid of being good as opposed to being great because they know it's hard from being good to being great and they just want to add instant coffee to it. And I think some fans have actually bought into it too. Yeah, it takes a little bit more creativity and a little more smart going from being good to being great. And being great is always the goal. But don't be afraid of getting good either.
Vincent, is trading for Mike Conley on the front of your mind because at 31 years old, with 2 years and 67 left on his deal, is that at the top of your mind in any way because you don't necessarily have faith that a guy like Patrick Beverley or Darren Collison or Ricky Rubio as a free agent are all that interested in coming to play for the Bulls?
It's not a matter of, to me, it's not a matter of an interest standpoint. For me, it's a matter of you have young players. And whether you believe in Jim Boylan as a coach and as a leader of men in a franchise, I believe that this team needs someone who can play the role of leader on the floor. Mm. So when I talk about Patrick Beverley, when I think about Patrick Beverley, I think about a guy who's a culture creator because of how hard he plays.
Sure.
And he can shame you into playing hard. But when I think about being a leader on the floor who can sort of bring pieces together because he has the requisite experience and he's still good enough that people will follow him, that's when I think of a guy like Mike Conley compared to some of the other guys that you've named because of he can still play and there's the intangibles. Not necessarily, well, this guy doesn't want to come here, this guy doesn't want to come here, and we're not going to bring Derrick Rose back, so let's go get a $30 million point guard, you know, to hold the top. That's not how I think. I just look at this roster and some of their intangible needs when you have so many young players.
Gotcha.
Vincent, great stuff. Thanks, man.
I appreciate it, guys.
That is Vincent Goodwill telling some Bulls truth. This segment brought to you by Arlington International Racecourse. This weekend, they're off and running with live racing and entertainment at beautiful Arlington International Racecourse. Leave work early for Friday racing. First race is 3:15. Join us Saturday to watch and wager on the Preakness Stakes. Visit arlingtonpark.com for details and VIP experiences. Guess what I was yesterday?
What?
I was a score caller.
Oh, God. Really?
Yes.
Did you talk about things that no one's bringing up?
No, I...
List your credentials?
I couldn't.
Or just otherwise mutter?
I couldn't help myself. I heard a bad sports thought and had to react to it, and I called the hotline, and Shep picks up, and I said, let me at this idiot, please. I have to talk to this guy.
Do we have the evidence?
I think we do. Wow. So you get to hear Dan Bernstein, score caller, next on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
Go eat your Big Mac and shut up.
So at 3 o'clock yesterday, I'm listening to McNeil and Parkins.
Sure.
Which I do. I really,
as one does.
And I really enjoy their show. I really do. I listen to it a lot because I'm driving around a lot in afternoons, running a lot of errands or doing stuff, you know, picking kids up and doing things, taking people places. And it's a really comfortable listen. And it's got, you know, Chris Tannehill doing Tannehill-like things. And I also love when they stray from sports too and just get into all sorts of just random stuff.
The nonsense.
On the Ish show. Yeah. Like I love their nonsense, or what McNeil would call the spanky to wanky. And, but that, it was sportsy yesterday because, you know, Parkins is leaving the country today. I think he knew he's leaving the country.
Oh,
today.
It felt like it.
So he sets this up. I'm like, what is it? He says, here's something no one said before. He said
it as we were walking out, that right. He's got something for you.
But I kind of forgot that. And then it was out of sight, out of mind. And then I remembered again when he teased it. And I'm like, okay, I'll listen to this. And his take was that if the Bulls landed Zion Williamson, they should tell him immediately, not wait to get to this place, but immediately say, hold on a second, big fella. Just know that you can't wear number one because Derrick Rose wore it.
That's a take, T-A-E-K.
That's not even his previous take of Derrick Rose's number should be retired.
Uh-huh.
Which is a debate you could have I think that's a ridiculous thing to say, too, because no, it shouldn't.
Well, it still has more purchase and merit.
Than saying that a non-retired number should be denied to your number one overall pick, the transformational lottery prize. You should jump in and inform him ahead of time that he can't wear one in case, perhaps, I guess, that one eventually is retired.
Probably just do it during the draft lottery broadcast, right?
And the best,
just say it right there.
And the best part of it, and this is something we probably should bring back to, if we can, is that when Parkins was rolling this all out, he said that the Derrick Rose's number one should be hanging from the Raptors. Which is, after all that, and
find them, and attach
and
a banner.
Planning this whole thing, and I will tell you that it's I'm never going to lose that one. We are now. There's no jersey ever that is ever on this station going to hang from rafters again.
No,
all jerseys will be hung from rafters.
Indeed,
from indeed. Here on in forever.
They will bulwark but structures and hang from rafters.
Can you hold this for me?
And any of them, any classic Raptors will be standing there as mannequins for Bulls retired jerseys. But I picked up the phone and I called the score.
Oh, good! Another coworker has called in on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Hello.
So what's going to happen is you're going to arrive in Amsterdam. You're going to be going through customs. They're going to say, your papers, please. You're going to slide your passport over there. And immediately, the customs agent is going to say, excuse me for a moment. And it's going to walk to the back, and then a supervisor is going to come out. And they're going to say, are you the guy who had that take about the Bulls and Zion Williamson and the jersey?
Yeah.
And you are going to be remanded into custody of the Dutch to be extradited somewhere, some black ops facility where you will be remanded and properly tortured for that sports thought.
What's your name, son?
Thank you, Bernstein.
Dan Bernstein. I'm from Deerfield, Illinois.
They got good weed there. I'll be fine.
Not in the prison, they don't.
Probably
come on,
not.
Man. Look, why? Look, what? This is all based on the premise that they get Zion Williamson, and your first thought is create some kind of artificial headwind, both with him and his agent and with that side, for no good reason whatsoever, when you're already forcing him to deal with the fact that he's playing for a doofus.
But well, that's yeah, we're in agreement there. But if they, you think he would want to wear number one? And
I don't care. That's immaterial to this discussion. You're saying go out of your way to let him know.
That's right.
No. We're happy to have you and everything, but you get this straight, Mister. Don't you think you can come in here and demand an unretired number?
It's in everyone's best interest that that number goes to the rafters,
and a number that should be remain unretired. Yes, Bernsey.
As of right now, how about this? If someday Zion Williamson is the player we think he is. I can't believe we're having this discussion. This is just insane. If someday, just as Fergie Jenkins and Greg Maddux shared the retirement of a number in complete validity, without a doubt to anyone involved, here is to that number going up with pride. To the Raptors.
Right up to the Raptors.
By the way, hereinafter, if I can unilaterally declare, there is no way going forward on Sports Radio 670 The Score that any number, again, will ever go to the Raptors.
Yeah, they all need to go to the Raptors.
That's over now. That's the best part of this whole thing.
Thank you, Bernsey.
Have a great trip, man.
Thank you very much.
Yep. Channeled your Tommy Lee Jones there for a minute. I don't care.
I don't care. It's just preposterous.
Oh, man.
It's insane, yeah, man.
It wasn't quite a Bob Bernstein call.
That was my
But
great
it was
uncle.
Close. But it was very close. You edged on the very cusp of sanity.
If it were my great uncle Bob Bernstein, it would have been about Nebraska football.
Definitely a Bob call.
Yeah, it would have
Hold
been.
On.
You're
burying the lead that you have a Bob in your family?
I had an Uncle Bob. I had Uncle Bob Wagner. I had an Uncle Bob Bernstein. Sure. I had Bobs and Dicks all over. Lots of those. I mean, think of that generation.
I think you can get seen for that.
That's right. A lot of Bobs. And there was Uncle Dick. And then there was Uncle Richard, who was an Uncle Dick. And at one point, he had a friend named Dick. So they called him Richard. Otherwise, I would have had two Uncles Dick. Is it Uncle Dick's or
I don't
Uncle
know what to
Dick?
Do with you right now. I don't know what to do with you right now. You're like your own little bubble of self-satisfaction, and I really don't know how to handle you right now.
I can't do that.
You called a different show. Like, we don't have 3 hours together here.
I couldn't help myself.
It's
that's
very
what your relationship with. I'm a listener. Look, this is the God's honest truth. I am a sports radio listener.
I know,
and I react the same way
yes,
as
you do
to things, to sports things. It's like you hear it, you're like, are you kidding me? I mean, and I didn't really, and he would not reveal to me, just, you know, full truth be told, like you say, he was mentioning, oh, I got something today.
It's TAEK.
But he said, I've got something. What did he say? I've got something that nobody in sports media is talking about.
I think he said, I have something that's going to make you hate me.
Is that what it was? But he said,
I think it was something like that.
But then I kind of didn't remember it because, you know, we get on with our day. And then they're like, oh, man.
I remember he was from the day he got here on the old show to Speaks, Jay, and myself was like, yeah, I've got this topic in the back pocket for whenever we need it. So then one day, I think we just kind of said, to hell with it, let's do it. And then he was like, yeah, Derrick Rose's number should be in the rafters. And we were all kind of like, okay. We weren't like 100% against it. We're just like, all right, cool.
Sure.
Do you really care that much?
Can't imagine investing in that at all whatsoever. But yeah, if that's your thing, go for it.
Well,
we've all got our windmills, right?
We tilt at what we can tilt at. And
sure.
I want to make sure we...
Danny Cote?
I'd be a bad fake Spanish conquistador.
It'd be very
he was.
Bad.
I'd be really bad at that. Now, there was a... There was a bit of news that I think we should at least mention, because several texters asked us, have you seen the story?
It's been reported in multiple places,
well,
yes.
It's public
that
we now know the reason why Ben Zobrist has taken his granted leave of absence from the Chicago Cubs, and there is public record of a divorce filing now that Juliana Zobrist has filed for divorce to end the 14-year marriage, and that would appear to be why there is a – an ongoing leave of absence that Joe Madden, did he use the term open-ended, or I forgot exactly what it was, but they haven't put an end date on the leave of absence.
Right, yeah, and I assume that this will be part of the discussions as they get to the ballpark today and decide whether or not to, or not decide whether or not, but ask about the timeline here. Because as it pertains to the Cubs, that's important, and they've been, I would imagine, more than helpful to that family to allow him to attend to the needs that that he's got.
And I think teammates will obviously have been there. Some have been through it before. Others haven't.
Yeah.
Times have changed where we used to. Was it Jose Contreras who went through a contentious and messy, difficult divorce, had a really bad season, and it wasn't till the next year that we found out that's what was troubling him?
Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah, I think that's right. Yep.
Wasn't he served on opening day?
Like, yes. Yes, you're right. That the papers were served at the park. So that is, my memory is not faulty in that regard. It is in some circumstances. But that is the story, and the filing is part of the public record, and at least have a little more explanation as to what's going on. I was just concerned that it was a health issue, that there was, you know, something going on. But
yeah, some of them might not have an actual resolution to things,
right.
And hopefully this can as best as it can. Midday Midway's on the way. We got stories about Enes Kanter and not playing defense, Joel Embiid and playing defense, and the stories around them, and a giveaway. That's kind of like, it's like Oprah Winfrey style.
I want to know what you would pay for one of Monet's haystacks paintings.
At least $17.
I want to know what you would pay.
At least starts at $17.
And this is something that apparently the folks over at Deadspin had a discussion in their offices that they thought actually merited data collection. They were arguing over arcade games.
Oh.
And not just video games.
Sure.
But any game in an arcade into which you could put money to play.
All right.
They argued, so they then collected data by sending around spreadsheets on which people could vote. And they have ranked from 39-1 the top arcade games.
Ooh.
And I will say this, that I'm not going to be a grandpa about this, because there is clearly a major generational difference. I'm not going to lament it. I'm just going to be aware of it.
Sure. Yeah. Well, it can inform our next trip to Emporium. That's what it'll do. Midday Midway is on the way.
The bottom of the hour is brought to you by Northwestern Football. Don't miss your chance to watch Big Ten football at Ryan Field this fall. The number 17 Northwestern Wildcats host Ohio State, Iowa, and more. Season tickets on sale now at NUSports.com.
And at 11 o'clock, you'll hear from John Paxson as well. It's Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago's sports station.
The first half or the second half, you know, it's they're two equal times.
Now, Midway.
The Midday Midway.
One, two.
Midway, the most important of the year.
Three, four.
The most exciting thing on the Midway.
Five, six, seven, eight.
Our objective is Midway.
9, 10.
You guys gotta meet me halfway out there.
So real, you can almost feel it.
The Midday Midway with Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
Commiserating today. The Bulls just bulls it all up yesterday, and there came seven. That's three sevens in a row. Now, if we were playing a slot machine,
that'd be nice.
That'd be awesome. This ain't a slot
machine. Looking
for cap
space. That's nice.
Yes, but they got
cap. If you're looking to win NBA titles, it's not so nice.
Yeah, Vincent Goodwill joined us to talk about it. We also mentioned another stellar performance by Kyle Hendricks. I want to get a little bit later on in the show. We have to get to some stuff. If you missed Ron Coomer with us, we were at Gallagher Way a couple of weeks ago, asking him about what Kyle Hendricks needed to do. And I'll be damned if Kyle Hendricks didn't go out and do just that. We're going to get that a little bit later. We also still have a shot at $1,000 cash. We're giving away Wolves tickets. But it's been very bullsy to this point on the show.
So if we're agreed on one thing here on the show today, it's that no, the Bulls had no need of giving number one to, or taking number one away from Zion before he even got there. The other thing we could agree on is that the Trailblazers are not going to win that series. That's not happening. That doesn't mean, though, that the story of Enes Kanter isn't an interesting one. We've kept you updated in the Midday Midway for a little while now about Enes Kanter. His government, the Turkish government, wants to arrest Enes Kanter for his dissonance against the president
Erdogan
in Turkey, Erdogan. And U.S. Senator Ron Wyden wants to ensure that Kanter, would be able to safely travel to Canada for a possible NBA championship series against the Raptors. Again, that's not happening. But if it did, they're on the lookout. And I found this pretty interesting. The senator wrote to Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau yesterday asking that his government, the Canadian government, facilitate Cantor's safe passage to and from if the Blazers advance to the series. He also urged the government to state publicly that it will not comply with any Interpol red notice meant to interfere with Cantor's livelihood and to intimidate him and his family back in Turkey. Enes Kanter is in, maybe not in danger, but being threatened by being held up in customs by a government that wants to lash out at him, if not imprison him, for speaking out publicly against a Democrat, in quotes, democratically elected official.
Kind of, yeah.
I mean, this is very much in quotes. But my goodness, I don't know how many people, NBA fans, know that this is going on.
The risks that he's taken.
This is a thing. I mean, whether or not you like his defense or ability to match up against the Warriors or the reasons that Terry Stotts has him sagging back on three-pointers and allowing the Warriors to shoot from anywhere, that's one thing. The fact that the guy is kind of has a threat levied on him to go back and forth to complete his job, that's something else. I thought you should know.
If you know of Claude Monet's Haystacks series, you know there are 21 in the series. There are 4 in private hands. The other 17 of them are in, they're scattered between the Scottish National Gallery, the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York, the D'Orsay in Paris, and the Art Institute of Chicago. We're very lucky to have them right down the street here. Very, very, very lucky. And they're amazing. They're simply haystacks in France, and he used them as a controlled thing on which he could paint different atmospheres of light as he saw them.
Okay.
And it's classic impressionism of these are these haystacks in winter. These are the haystacks in summer at dawn. And his ability to capture the essence of the sunlight, of the color, of everything. It sounds simple, but they're jaw-dropping to the point of being transformative. And like the water lilies, sometimes the longer you stand in front of some of these paintings, the more you are absorbed into it. It can be an incredible experience if you're open to being able to experience great art in that way. But those 4 that are not in museums are privately held, and one of them just sold.
Ooh.
At auction.
Right.
Under the Hammer, as they say, at Sotheby's, New York. And this painting, it's a normal size painting. What do you think it sold for? Take a guess.
So this is one of 21.
There are 21 haystacks.
But only 4 of the 21 are privately owned.
Private, correct. The other 17 are in those museums.
So there's a rarity. They seem to be very important. I'm going to go, is it like $10 million?
You're off by a multiple. $110.7 million.
Whoa!
$110.7 million Tuesday night. 44 times what it raised when it was last sold at auction in 1986. 6 bidders battled for more than 8 minutes. The identity of the winner
took 8 minutes to get not revealed. $10 million.
It went up to $110 million in 8 minutes. Pretty good.
Give me a thumbs up, thumbs down on this. It was an emotional exit for Joel Embiid and the Sixers as the ball bounced 4 times off the rim from a shot of Kawhi Leonard. But we found out that Embiid has some offseason plans. Trust the process, which has been a rallying cry for the 76ers, and of course now Joel Embiid. He is now trademarked the process. Mm-hmm. It's his personal, you know, it's the nickname, but it is also going to be something that he uses in different products. One of them is going to be a pre-bottled non-alcoholic Shirley Temple drink.
No, if you're using the process, it should be like skincare.
This is the process. It is a pre-bottled non-alcoholic Shirley Temple drink, which I guess grenadine and ginger ale, right? That's how you make the Shirley Temple. That's a favorite of Embiid's. According to this page, he used to drink 3 to 4 pitchers of Shirley Temple a day before cutting back to just 1 glass.
Of grenadine and ginger ale and maraschino cherry juice?
That is a lot.
Really?
That's quite a bit. He is also going to throw the process onto t-shirts and whatnot, which makes a lot more sense. I mean, but the drink is going to be called the process. So I don't really know where we're headed there. If it's a Shirley Temple, I don't know. This gets a lot of traction.
Can you throw a little vodka in it if you want?
Certainly you could.
Okay.
Vodka, whatever you're looking to put into there, you could absolutely do that.
And don't call me Shirley.
3 to 4 pitchers. I mean, that's up there with CC Sabathia's like 9 boxes of Captain Crunch a day or whatever the hell he was eating.
That's pretty serious.
That's a lot.
So one of these office discussions turned into Deadspin staffers being Deadspin staffers, and they have sent around a spreadsheet, and they had voting on arcade games.
Perfect.
I'm not going to judge because these, I think, are just generally younger people, and it becomes clear in the way this was voted on. I've never even heard of or played the number one arcade game here. But in New York, like here, like Quarters HQ and Emporium and all these other places spot, yeah, where you can go play games. And I think you should be allowed to play them all for free, where you just, you know.
I wish that were the case. I guess that business front model didn't last very long.
So here are their rankings. And I think this plays right to you, Connor. Number 39 is Q-Bert.
Oh, that game sucks.
Number 38, as always appears on their list, is getting hit by a car.
That's appropriate.
They always do that.
It's appropriate.
To emphasize how bad Q-Bert is. And I will go up from 37 to number 1.
Okay.
So these are getting better as we go. Big Buck Hunter.
Oh, yeah, it's a great game.
Space Invaders. Frogger.
Yeah.
Bubble Hockey.
Bubble Hockey. Oh, yeah. Hell yeah.
Which should be higher. Star Wars Trilogy.
Oh, it's such a great game.
Galaga, yeah. Asteroids,
sure.
Donkey Kong.
That is a difficult. I have thrown a lot of beer because of failing at Donkey Kong.
Dance Dance Revolution, Joust.
Joust is fun.
Crazy Taxi.
I don't think I know that one.
Dig Dug.
Good game.
I always said that when Paul Konerko runs, I hear the Dig Dug music.
But it's slowed down by a factor of 5.
Daytona USA, Foosball.
Ugh. No, that should not. I like foosball. It should not be there on that list.
Ms. Pac-Man is number 23.
23?
Yep.
For an iconic all-timer.
Just wait. Pole Position.
Don't know it.
You know Pole Position?
No, it's Pole Position.
Prepare to qualify. It's
is a race, just a racing game?
It's pole. Like Formula One racing. Yeah. You sit, and the early version, you actually sat in a seat in a self-contained module.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, cool. I know the game.
House of the Dead. I got nothing.
No.
NFL Blitz.
It's a great game.
Now we're in the top 20. Golden Tee.
Yes.
Time Crisis.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. That one's a good one. You've got the gun, and you're shooting, and you have a pedal to move into and out of cover. You got to be quick on that one.
Tekken.
Fighting game. Not my thing, but everybody loves it.
Terminator 2.
That gets a little boring quick.
Number 15 is Skee-Ball.
Skee-Ball's great.
Number 14 is Pinball.
Pinball? That seems huge.
Marvel versus Capcom.
Another fighting game. Really good stuff.
Double Dragon.
Oh, that's great.
Mortal Kombat.
Same.
We have now reached the top 10. Air Hockey. Street Fighter 2.
Okay.
NBA Jam.
That's not a top 5.
Golden Axe.
Don't know it. Don't even know. Golden Axe?
Oh, I love Golden Axe. What? That was a Sega Genesis classic. You can be an elf, a warrior, or a naked lady.
Oh, yeah. I know the one you're talking about. Okay. It's like a side-scrolling Contra-type game. Yeah,
you ride on a turtle, and you kick some gnomes. And
Go kick some gnomes.
Makes all the sense in the world. That looks awesome.
Sure, gotcha. All right. Number 6 is Rampage.
Love Rampage. Completely Sega Genesis
pointless
Rampage.
Game.
Oh, it was amazing.
All you do is feed quarters in for no apparent reason. Number 5, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
That's the greatest arcade game of all time.
Number 4 is X-Men.
Also, fantastic game. Same setup, though. That's number the four. You know the one we're talking about, right? It's 4 players, and you all get to play co-op.
So is number 3, which is Gauntlet.
Those are all the same.
Valkyrie is about to die.
Great. You know Gauntlet.
Warrior, your life force is in danger.
Nice.
Yes.
Nice.
Number 2 is Papa Shot.
Poppy Shot's terrific.
And I have to tell you, I have never played the number 1 game. I couldn't even tell you what it is or what it does. but they're one of ones. The all-time greatest arcade game.
I know what it is.
Is The Simpsons.
Sure. Yeah, I would put that absolutely in a top five situation. I've got the Teenage Turtles in Time over that. It's the same setup. It's the four-player board, right?
But what
you
do
have
you
the joystick.
What's
you have attack and jump. It's the same kind of side-scrolling co-op thing. Marge has a vacuum that she swings around. Bart swings his skateboard. Homer's just. I think he punches. Right?
Homer punches. Yes.
Homer punches, and then Lisa has. Is it a saxophone that she uses? As
that
a weapon.
Makes sense, but I never chose Lisa.
It's no one ever did.
You choose me.
And then there's like mini games in between where you inflate Krusty the Clown's balloon and stuff.
Like Zig Dug.
Oh my God, it's fantastic.
The one thing, there's only one that's missing for me, just personally, a John Elway football.
John Elway football.
It was 2-on-2. You could play 1-on-1. You could play against a computer, or you could play twos.
And you'd never win unless you had a good running back.
And that game was. Fabulous.
Was John Elway football the one that was for Genesis where you just drop all the way back and you could throw 100 yards every play?
I don't know about a home version. I only know the arcade version.
Franchise mode on John Elway football sucked.
Yeah, there's missing from sort of my generation here, like Zaxxon and others. But okay.
Oh, Lisa had a jump rope. That's what she had.
There
Lisa
you
had
go.
By the way, the Star Wars trilogy game is my all-time favorite, but it was just never available.
Oh, no, never. There was like a mean little 7-year-old on the thing, and you couldn't move him because his mom was wide. That was,
When Mitch gives me a raise, I'm going to get a home version of the Star Wars trilogy game for my house.
You did not say the R word in this studio.
This segment was brought to you by ABC Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electric. John Paxson was on these airwaves earlier today. We're going to bring him back, and he's licking his wounds today because the Bulls have the 7 pick.
Huzzah!
Ha-ha! You'll get his explanation, and you'll get to react to it. Also want to get to Kyle Hendricks, his resurgence, and what was predicted about his resurgence on our show. Also mentioned, tomorrow at this time, we will be getting ready for a conversation with Cubs general manager Jed Hoyer.
It's the Bernstein McKnight Show, 670 The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.